This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettea along with Charlie Long at 5:45. Steve Geller will join us for our triple option feature at 4:20 or a little bit after. WWL's TV sports director Doug Mouton will come aboard with us, and we'll talk kind of across the board, Saints, NFL, LSU, Tulane, even a little bit of UNO and what's happening there in fundraising for UNO, and also what's happening from what he hears on the potential gambling situation that happened at UNO. And at 5:20, the legend himself, Pete Jenkins, will come on with us. Pete will talk about Bo Davis, the new Saints defensive line coach. Bo Davis is a Pete Jenkins protege, and I think other than Ryan Nielsen, I think that Pete probably talks to Bo more than anyone that he has affiliation with. And Pete knows everybody in the business. And I'm not saying they talk every day, but with Ryan, I think that's a every other day situation. So we'll get Pete's take on Bo Davis, also where he thinks LSU might go. If he wants to tell us that, because I think he's got a little bit better insights than what I do on it. And Kevin Peoples also, who is going to take on a much bigger role now. He coached the defensive ends where Bo Davis coached the defensive tackles and did a tremendous amount of recruiting for him. But I know Coach Jenkins and Kevin Peoples have got to know one another very well over the last couple years. And at 6:25, Ali Cosell, who covers the NBA and the Pelicans, he'll be on with us. And it's a four-game road trip, Charlie, for the Pels. Back-to-back games against the Suns, but certainly the big news today, Bo Davis, who has coached before in the NFL. He had a one-year kind of run in Jacksonville, and he had a couple seasons with the Detroit Lions. And I remember him coming to the Louisiana Lion Camp, and he was with the Lions at that time and talking to me about the difference between college and pro football. And one thing with Bo, he's all about, hey, I'm a teacher. I learned that from Coach Jenkins. This is about teaching. I'm in the classroom. I'm teaching. I'm on the football field teaching. Coaching is teaching. And also motivation. So we'll get Pete's take on that, but certainly big news today. Bo Davis, the new defensive line coach with the New Orleans Saints.
Well, LSU fans are not very happy, and Saints fans should be very happy. Bo Davis is fantastic, Mike. I remember when we talked with Pete when Bo Davis made the move from Texas to LSU, Pete said he's one of his favorites. Pete's a legendary defensive line coach. We always talk about, you know, his incredible illustrious career every time we get him on, but Pete loves Bo. And he talks about how hard-nosed and tough he is. But he's, as you mentioned, he's a teacher when it comes down to it.
Charlie, I'll be honest with you. They have people that covered University of Alabama maybe for the last 15 years. And they will tell you there's been nobody close to Bo Davis in how he coached at University of Alabama and got the most out of his players. That's high praise when you hear that from people kind of outside the realm. But what Bo did with that group at University of Alabama, that group of defensive linemen. And one thing I do know, man, when you coach for Coach Saban, you better have a thick hide because he gets on you but good. And, man, Pete's got some unbelievable stories about how Saban will not only jump players, but who he really jumps? Assistant coaches.
And the work that he did with Texas as well, yeah. Mike. I mean, getting Texas ready to be an SEC school when their toughness in the trenches. The one word that comes to mind when you think of Bo Davis as far as everyone's opinion of him is respect. He is so highly respected in NFL circles and college football circles and media circles. Anyone that knows the guy will speak highly of him. So it's a very exciting hire for the Saints. Bo Davis, for those that don't know, he's actually had a couple different stops in the NFL. So this isn't his first one. You mentioned he spent a couple of years with Detroit from 2018 through 2020 as the defensive line coach. You know, also spent time with Jacksonville in 2016, a little bit before that, Miami in 2006. But what he's most well known for, as you mentioned, he spent a couple different stints with Alabama, with Texas, and most recently with LSU as well. So he's been around the block, Mike.
And it hurts him on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, that's the one thing.
That's the big kick.
And my question about Bo making the jump back to the NFL is, was he kind of tired of like the new era of college recruiting?
I would say that's a yes,
because
Charlie.
That really would make sense. I mean, he's known for being a fantastic recruiter, but the transfer portal and the new era of NIL must have made it so difficult for him.
Yeah,
so,
no question.
Now he's back in the NFL circle.
And I doubt seriously he's making the money he was making at LSU. He was the highest paid defensive line coach in college football. I think he may have taken that pay cut to go to the NFL, but you know, you have no free time in college football. You're around college football coaches, it's 365. It's 24/7, day and night, and you're re-recruiting the same players over and over and over again. Now, as an NFL coach, it's a lot of time you spend, especially during the football season, at the facilities. But you do have some off time, and you do at least kind of know who you're coaching. But for it's day-to-day, so to speak, in college football that you can drag up and go somewhere else. I was reading on 3 Sports that the starting cornerback from Tennessee yesterday decides, I'm leaving. I'm going in the transfer portal.
We've talked with college baseball coaches, we've talked with college basketball coaches, and we've talked with college football coaches, Mike, and they all say the same thing. You don't have to just recruit players from other rosters. You have to keep recruiting the players that are on your roster. So that's got to be tiring for some of these coaches. I understand the move to hop back into the NFL. As I mentioned, Saints fans should be excited with this, Mike. Bo Davis, by all accounts, is fantastic at what he does, and that's teach defensive line play.
And I do think that you're going to see a familiar face with him from time to time at some of these mini camps. And
Mr. Pete Jenkins.
He's white-haired. He's 83 years old. But the one thing with Papa Pete, he's going to retire when they lay him away, as he always tells me. When they're going to lay me down for the last time, that's when I'm going to retire. So I do think you'll see Pete Jenkins working with Bo. He also is going to work with the LSU guys, too. He has gotten to be real close with Kevin Peoples, and I think now Kevin's probably going to get that title of defensive line coach, and they'll hire someone else to come in to be coaching, especially the interior defensive line.
Because Coach Peoples worked with the edge rushers, and he was credited a lot for Savion and Braden's development this past year with LSU. So, yeah, I would agree. I think he probably gets the promotion of full-time defensive line coach, but they will bring in maybe a specialist for interior guys because Bo was kind of more of the interior working. But I remember, you know, Coach Kelly talked a lot about Coach Peoples. So for the LSU fans out there that are really upset about this, Coach Peoples is a fantastic coach in his own right. They had two really great defensive line coaches this past year with Bo Davis and Kevin Peoples. Bo's making the jump. Peoples is staying put.
Yeah, and they finally got a little bit of talent to surround the coaches. So you're a lot, and Bo was one of them to tell you, I'm a lot smarter coach when I got better talent. And it looks as though they were accumulating that. But again, congratulations to Bo Davis, the new defensive line coach for the New Orleans Saints. We'll take a break and come back. We'll have on with us Doug Mouton from WWL Television. Talk to him about Saints, LSU, Tulane, UNO right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTellier along with Charlie Long in studio and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, Sports Director at WWL Television, Doug Mouton. Douglas, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Of course, Mike. How have you been?
I'm doing great. I just saw you a week ago, so you knew I was kicking a little bit.
Yeah.
So we all good.
But you know what? You can never get too much Mike DeTellier.
Yeah, right. Doug, before we get into Saints stuff, I'll ask you, because we don't know the ends of this, on what happens at UNO with the probe into the gambling situation. What maybe have you been able to find out over the last couple of days about this? Because, you and I sort of both lived with this situation with Ned Fowler and Hot Rod and was involved at Tulane and that sort of thing. And all the time, I've told this to Charlie, most of the time this gets caught initially by Vegas people. They see something a little bit out of the ordinary. It isn't the local FBI or anything like that. This is something that they spot somewhere. So kind of give us a little bit of insights of what you maybe know.
Yeah, I can tell you, Mike, I have not been able to find out much at this point. Honestly, most of the people from my era of UNO are not at UNO anymore. But you're 100% right about that. There have been betting scandals and then even near betting scandals that are all found out sort of in Las Vegas by in-house people who study numbers of how people are betting. And if there's anything suspicious, and I'm not exactly sure what kind of algorithms they use to figure that out, but if there's anything suspicious that on this end, I'd be willing to bet money that by the time it comes out, the investigation was originated by people taking the bets. And of course, it's almost always impossible to keep things quiet when more than one or two people are involved. But no, look, I wish I could give you some insight, Mike. I'm just getting back from Pensacola. A friend of mine won an award last night, so I've been in Pensacola for the last 2 days. So beyond what you know, I don't know a lot.
Going to the Saints now, and this isn't a surprise to me, them reaching into the college ranks for assistant coaches. I know a lot of them, assistant coaches, and they say, man, this is the wild, wild west today. And they would much rather take the pay cut, which I think, in fact, I'm pretty certain about this. Bo Davis took a pay cut to go from LSU to the Saints. Bo Davis was the highest paid defensive line coach in college football. The Saints are not making him that type of offer, but you see it now. Peter Sermon, you saw Terry Joseph. We see it with Bo Davis, and Bo did have some prior time in the NFL with the Lions, also with the Jacksonville Jaguars. But your thoughts, one, on Bo Davis, who's a Pete Jenkins protege, and we'll have Pete on at 5:20, and I know how close they are together.
Oh, that's nice.
And
that's
so
good timing with Pete.
So he called me this morning because Steve Geller got in touch with me. He said, Mike, what you want to do in the Bo Davis thing? By the time I could get my cell to get Pete, Pete had already called me because I'd scheduled him for Monday. I'd scheduled him for Monday. He said, you want me today or you want me Monday?
That's great.
I said, hold on a second. Today, 5:20. But, Doug, I think we've seen it now. Wild, wild west of college athletics, not just football, but across the board.
And, look, here's the one thing that I say every time I talk about Saints, I start with this because I feel like I need to. There is no guarantee that Kellen Moore is going to have success and he's going to win games and the Saints are going to play in NFC Championship games again. There's no guarantee. But I say that off the bat because there's no guarantee he's going to win. But I love everything that the way the Saints handled it. And I know, man, people love ripping into Mickey Loomis, but I love the way he handled it from the start. And look, the big thing to me, Mike, was I thought the Saints got exactly what they needed in Kellen Moore. The Saints are almost sort of an old, stodgy organization, and I don't mean in people's age. I just mean in sort of a thinking sense that they've run it the same way for a long time. They preach patience. They preach, we're going to take our time and get it right, all of that. So what that organization needed, though, was a young person and new ideas, and they got both. And then what you're seeing out of Kellen Moore, and I like every step of the way in his coaching staff. Look, the one thing I think is the most important thing to do from his standpoint is to bring in a complete diversity of ideas. You want young and old and college and pro and every way that you can find different people and different smart people and bring them in a room. Look, I love Doug Nussmeier as the offensive coordinator, a guy that's in his mid-50s that has been with him, so he's loyal, but he'll also be sort of the voice of reason of the older guy. He's got the former head coach as his defensive coordinator, and yes, he's going to bring ideas from college. I love the Terry Joseph hire. I love the Bo Davis hire. Like, bring in different ideas from different places. I like everything. Again, no guarantee it's going to work, but I like everything that he's done and the way he's done it. And honestly, that whole process for me started with sort of how Mickey Loomis handled it. The one thing I wanted to see out of this whole process was somebody who had never coached in the building. Now, I loved Aaron Glenn, and that would have been a spectacular hire, but to have a guy who's 36 years old, and he's the oldest 36-year-old you ever met. He's plenty mature enough to handle the job, it would seem. And so they brought in the young ideas, the young guy, never in the building, and his staff. Look, there's stars on his staff. The one thing we've said in the last couple of years when you go to training camp, if you look at Dennis Allen's staff, there weren't many guys you would have picked out and said, that guy's a future head coach. But now you're looking at the staff already that Kellen Moore's put together, and you're seeing a lot of guys who, you know, can be more than what their job is.
Doug, the other thing about it is, and it starts today at the Combine, we get to see the offensive, defensive linemen, the guys that are deciding to work out, and this is an area the Saints have to get better at. You got to win in the trenches. And I think Super Bowl Sunday taught everybody the lesson that as good as Mahomes is, man, when you're running for your life, you got troubles. And the Eagles' ability to run the football, big men up front, moving people around, and that stat that they led the NFL in attempted rushes and will last in the NFL in attempted passes goes to show you it was an old school, I'm going to show you what I'm going to do. Now, I think there's one caveat in there, and it's a guy, I went through this a lot. We did our mock draft, and I got the Saints going for Tyler Warren. I just think he's a special big man receiver.
Yeah.
And some of the guys defensively that I would have wanted were off the board when I got to nine. And so I would love to get Mason Graham, but he's not going to be there. I thought about Jaylen Walker, but I got him going to Carolina. Your thoughts on the rebuilding of this team?
Yeah, well, look, I'm so glad you asked me that because I think 90% of the talk has been about Derek Carr and what they're doing at quarterback. And I'm not diminishing the quarterback position, but for right now, it is definitely not what I would consider my primary concern or what I think the Saints' primary concern should be. Because no matter who you're playing at quarterback, they cannot exist in the offensive line that the Saints have right now. Look, you got to go eight deep on the offensive line. That's a fact in the NFL. Eight guys are going to want to play in significant snaps in the NFL. And right now, I think the Saints have three offensive linemen. Trevor Penning potentially could be four, especially in Kellen Moore's offense that you think is going to try to run the ball a lot. That does play to Penning's strength. So maybe you got four. That means you need four offensive linemen. Last year, the Saints went into the season with Lucas Patrick as a starting offensive lineman. And look, he was the best guy on the team. But the fact is, he was a free agent for 3 months and nobody signed him. That doesn't happen in the NFL unless there's a reason for that. Now, if that guy's your seventh or eighth guy, you can live with that. But that guy was a starting offensive guard. And then Ali Udo, who was sort of the same thing, a free agent that nobody had signed, that the Saints signed later, wound up, I think Ali Udo played the fourth most snaps of any Saints offensive lineman because of the way the injuries worked out. There's no hope for sustained success with that kind of offensive line. So to me, let's take this year, get better on the offensive line, hopefully get better on the defensive line at the same time. And if you find a quarterback, if something works out, that's great. Worry about the quarterback problem next year when you've got 2 years of building. That's just sort of how I'm looking at this team, that you've got to start up front. And the Saints were so weak on the offensive line. Three potentially great players. It's a good start, but then two of them are out. And it was just a situation where you just couldn't win, and what they had backing up those guys was just not going to allow you to win.
I look at it from the college ranks. It isn't make or break, so to speak, for Brian Kelly at LSU, but it's you better get into the top 12. You better get into the playoff system. But we got the star coach in New Orleans, and it's John Sumrall and what he's been able to do. I didn't think they could hire a guy that was going to be on Willie Fritz's level as far as a coach.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Man, but I think they got one better. I think at John, man, Coach John has done a fantastic job.
Yeah, no question.
And Doug, is his ability to recruit and adjust very quickly to certain things. And we have our Tulane Tuesday every week, and he told me something a couple times that stuck with me about how he recruited. And he said sometimes we'll have a 4 or 5 star recruit that, you know, Tulane's sort of down on the list for them. They have an interest, but they're not coming here the first time. But he said, I want to make that connection because if things don't work out, I can always say, hey, we were trying to recruit you. It wasn't us. You decided, but we got a spot for you.
Yeah, I think that's the most modern recruiting technique of all time or what?
Yes.
Like, that is playing to today's situation. You know, like, John Simrall's been spectacular. And honestly, I thought there was a great chance he was going to be one and done this year and wasn't going to be coming back. The fact that he's coming back is awesome. Yeah, look, Willie Fritz did not leave the cupboard bare by any stretch. And what Willie Fritz built is incredibly impressive. I mean, look, Mike, you and I have lived here, me, for almost all of my life.
Yep.
And, like, there, just the fact that you can say now Tulane is expected to be in the conference championship conversation, that was like a 30-year span when you could never say that. And, or maybe you'd get one blip here or there. We're going to be going on, 4 straight years where that's the expectation. And that's, I mean, Willie Fritz did that. So when you say he's better than Willie Fritz, I'm not ready to say that after 1 year yet. Now, I will say he has been amazing, and the fact that they're keeping him is great. And what he did was he took what Willie Fritz had, and he built a team out of the parts he had, and he used them extremely well. Brought in some speed at the outside, which made the running game work. You know, he had a functional offensive line, which was a beautiful thing. And he did a great job of coaching that team. I mean, Tulane football is nothing like what it was 10 years ago. And that's a beautiful thing. I mean, it's fun to watch. It's entertaining. And they're competing for conference championships. And that's what they're expected to do now.
Doug, Mike and I talked about this a lot yesterday. Derek Carr, you mentioned kind of how the trenches are more important, and I agree with you, but the money situation's where this gets kind of tricky, because the $51.4 million cap number for this upcoming year is the fourth highest in the NFL. You know, Cat Terrell had a great article on ESPN yesterday talking about if they restructure it, a full restructure, yes, you could save $30 million in cap this year, but then his cap hit jumps up to $69 million in 2026.
Yeah, and either way, you got to pay it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You got to pay it at some point, and it feels just like another move. Like, the term kick the can down the road gets overused, but it's pretty apt here, and Mike and I agreed. I want to get your thoughts on it. It just doesn't seem like the best financial decision.
No. Oh, no. I think they're going to want to be eating that number regardless. Look, in the greatest, most ideal scenario, the Saints would find a trade partner, and I said what would be funny is what that trade might look like, because to get, just because of that enormous contract, it might be Derek Carr and a 4, and you get a 6. You know what I mean? Like, it might be the craziest trade you've ever seen, but that would look, and I don't think that's going to happen. It seems unlikely. Obviously, that I think that would be the best thing for the Saints, because you would get rid of that number. And either way, by the time this team's ready to win, Derek Carr is not going to be the quarterback. He's just not. That's the it's not lining up, you know, that way. So yeah, you can play him this year. I guess you could bench him this year. I don't know if that works. You know, there's a thing about cutting him after June, but you still got to get under the cap now. Yeah, it's a rough situation. It's why I keep saying just manage expectations for 2025. Look, people seem to be really excited about Kellen Moore. What I don't want to happen is that the Saints go, 6-11, and then people give up too fast. Like, 2025, because of those kind of problems, is going to be an incredibly difficult year. I don't know if they can figure out a way to sign any free agent offensive linemen. So hopefully you draft a couple of guys, but the offensive line may not be much better. So winning this year is going to be really hard. And so I don't know the best solution, because there is not one that seems good, other than if you can find a trade partner. And again, I acknowledge that's a long shot.
No easy way out, Doug. No easy way out of this.
Yeah. And Mike, they knew this last year.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't sign anyone beyond 1 year. They gave Chase Young 1 year. They gave Willie Gay 1 year. They didn't invest last year to put them more in a hole. It's just that the hole was already so big that they're still digging out of it.
Doug, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always appreciate your time. Hope you had a good time out in Florida. But now you got to get back to work, and you got to go cover Mardi Gras. Come on.
Oh, well, I'll be in Baca Sunday night. I can't wait.
All righty. Thank you, Doug. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, Mike.
Doug Mouton, sports director at WWL TV Channel 4 here in New Orleans. Come back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Want to thank Doug Mouton for joining us for a few minutes talking Saints, certainly, and also college football. Charlie, really sad news coming from LSU as it was confirmed that the LSU freshman pole vaulter Dylan Ridenour died in a car crash Wednesday night in Baton Rouge. She was 18 years old. Ugh. And, man, you know, hearts and prayers go out when you lose somebody that young. Man, you know, you think about their family immediately, mom and dad and all friends. And so we do have people here that brought it up to me. And, man, again, I didn't know Dylan at all, but I do remember when signed on, so to speak, at LSU. And so our thoughts and prayers go out to the Ridenour family for the loss of Dylan in a just terrible car crash. 18 years old to lose your life. So, again, our thoughts and prayers go out with her. Charlie, we were talking a little bit about the combine, and the big men were running today, and I saw Cam Jackson, who is from Haynesville, Louisiana, was a verbal commit to Coach O and LSU. He had a grade problem or two. And finally, he signs on with Memphis late, spent a couple years there. Then Billy Napier was trying to get him to go to UL when he was there. And so he signs with Florida. I don't know what his weight was. The last time I saw him, he was over 350 pounds. I think he has lost some weight. Charlie, if I saw right, he ran a 5.18 40-yard dash. Listen, that's the fastest I've ever seen him run. Right. You talk about a big man that can move. Cam Jackson is that. From Haynesville, Louisiana, and he bounced around a little bit. And had he had his grades right, he would have been able to get in at LSU. It just didn't work out there. But sometime God puts you in the right place, right time. Goes to Memphis. Then he follows Billy to University of Florida. And, man, talk about a big man athlete. Cam is that. He can run, and he is a big hoss in the middle.
Yeah, a lot of defensive linemen are currently actually getting their times right now, Mike. Derek Harmon, who's someone that you had kind of in the back end of your first mock, just put on a 4.97 in his first 40-yard dash attempt.
Who did that?
Derek Harmon.
Oh, that don't surprise me. And when we get Pete on, we're going to check. Pete has worked at University of Oregon. Now, Derek was a transfer guy. He started out at Michigan State. Derek Harmon's the one guy, Charlie, I told you, every pick, like the last nine for me, it was Derek Harmon or...
Yeah, a lot of those teams could use interior defensive line help, and obviously Derek Harmon is one of those guys.
He's like, a big
loaded
man.
Class, Mike.
He's a big man in the middle.
And he also runs a sub 5 in the 40-yard
dash. So if you mess with him and you try to run away from him, you got issues.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he can also catch you on that end. And a lot of the guys... We also saw a couple guys pull out because of hamstring issues that they had that was caught. Now, you never go through a physical like you will at the combine. Man, they got anything body part on you, they've checked it out. And so we've had some of them decide not to run. And the news on Abdul Carter. Boy, the other agents, are they going to beat the drum on this? And I just tell everybody, be careful. They want to try to get him to drop. Man, listen, he ain't getting past the third pick. He most likely will go two because I think Cam Ward goes one. But, man, these agents will beat the drum about, man, y'all got damaged goods with Abdul Carter? Yeah, he got a little issue, but it's not a major one.
And if he gets past the third pick, then he's going with the fourth pick to the Patriots. Like, this is all ridiculous. It's Abdul Carter. He's one of the three blue-chip prospects in this class. He's not falling past, you know, pick three. And Mike, real quick, we do have NFL just tweeted this about an hour ago. The 40-yard dash official for the 2025 defensive lineman, Ty Robinson from Nebraska, leads the way at 4.83 at his size.
Charlie, I'm going to be honest with you. I know the guy that works him out. He told me he's run sub 4.8.
Wow.
Now, again, this does not tell you if he can play, because I think with Ty, at times he gets caught in certain spots. I don't think he's the most instinctive guy in the world. But, man, is he an athlete.
Now, the two guys that I know can play are right smack dab in the middle of this list, Mike. And that's Derek Harmon, as I mentioned, a 4.95, and Darius Alexander from Toledo, a 4.95 as well. They both tied for fifth on this ranking. So a couple guys I think could see their or hear their name called pretty early in the 2025 draft.
Halfway into the 2024 season, we were doing the pregame for LSU. And Herb Tyler tells me, tell me a guy I don't know nothing about that you think will end up maybe being a first-round pick. I said, Darius Alexander from Toledo. He said, Toledo? I said, yeah.
Quinyon Mitchell.
I said, Quinyon got picked in round one. He said, yeah, but Mike, a big man, why did he stay? I was like, well, maybe they got some NIL money that kept him at Toledo. But you could tell his progression as a player, every week when you watched him, he got better and better. He goes to the combine. He was kicking everybody's rear end there. And so for him to put on a show like that in Indy, that don't surprise me.
Mike, he's an older prospect, too.
Yes, he is. 25.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a guy that NFL ready. We talk about that all the time. And he's going to go in the back end of
very
the first
mature,
round.
Very mature.
Go in the back end of the first round to a team that needs defensive line help, and he's going to help them right off the bat. So Darius Alexander, but a very nice kind of showing at the combine early on, kind of proving himself as a future first-round pick.
That's one of those guys that if you pick in a fight and think you're going to run away from him, you better be a track sprinter because he's that type of guy. And he's put up some really nice numbers every week he was double-teamed, every week at Toledo. I knew if I was playing Toledo and I had to block him, it wasn't going to be with one guy. It was going to be two every snap. We'll be back to finish it up here in hour number one of Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870. I want to thank Doug Mouton from Channel 4 WWL Television for joining us, talking Saints college football, also UNO basketball. At 5:20, the legend himself, Pete Jenkins, will join us, talking about Bo Davis becoming the new Saints defensive line coach and also about everything defensive line since those guys are testing out today at the NFL Combine out in Indy. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio. And at 5:45, it's our triple option feature. Steve Geller will join us a little after 5:20. Pete Jenkins, legendary defensive line coach, on with us to talk about Bo Davis and also some of the defensive linemen in this draft class. Charlie, before we talk a little bit of LSU baseball, let me answer a couple of texts. One, and I think I answered this yesterday, but he might not have been listening. Mike, anyway, Jack Sawyer, I hope he slips to the Saints in the second round. Would that be possible? I think that's a chance. Now, in a loaded area, which defensive line, got a lot of guys there, I think they have some distance, so to speak, with them. A lot of times you see them last a little bit longer than you might think they would last in the draft. My thing with Jack Sawyer, he reminds me a lot of his style of play of Trey Hendrickson. He's a little bit bigger, filled out guy, a little bit taller, but a five-star recruit. Actually, Ohio State thought about moving him to tight end, because he played some of that in high school. But, man, every time you watched Ohio State play, he was a playmaker. And they were trying to chip him, trying to get extra people on him. Jack Sawyer is a really good football player, and he's in that group of players I've got ranked from 24 to basically 40, with almost the exact same grade. So I'm a big fan of Jack Sawyer, because he gives you everything he's got on every play, and he got a lot to give for his talent's concern.
Who made the biggest play of Ohio State's season in that playoff run? It was Jack Sawyer. In that semifinal game against Texas, where Texas is driving, trying to tie that game up, Jack Sawyer just cooks Connor Williams, the right tackle of Texas, and he forces a strip. picks it up, returns it all the way back down the field for a touchdown to put the game out of reach.
Over and under move, and pow, he's into the backfield.
He had Connor Williams shooting for ghosts at that point. It was incredible. But Jack Sawyer, I love him as a prospect, Mike. He's a first-round pick, in my opinion. I would love to see him potentially fall to the Saints at pick 40. In my first mock, I had him going to the Detroit Lions at pick 28. I don't know if he's going to fall into the second round. If he does, I think that would be a great fit. But we'll just have to kind of see. I loved your comp for him yesterday, by the way, Mike, where you kind of said Trey Hendrickson.
It's close.
Is the type of motor that he's got. Jack Sawyer, a fantastic edge prospect and a great defensive line class.
I got this yesterday right as I was leaving, and someone asked me about Woody Marks, the halfback from USC. Now, a lot of people remember Woody because he played at Mississippi State.
Right.
He was a transfer guy. Man, Woody Marks, he is getting undervalued for the type back he is. Shifty, fast. He can hit the edge. He runs hard in between the tackles. He's a terrific receiver coming out of the backfield. And so he's one of those halfbacks in the middle rounds of the draft that I would keep a real close eye on, because Woody Marks is a really good football player. He's not getting a lot of love, so to speak, because there are other guys that may be a little bit bigger or a little bit faster. Woody Marks is a football player, and the fact of the matter is that he can run with power, he can run with speed, he can catch the ball coming out of the backfield. He was a major part of that offense for the Trojans last year. And being that dual threat guy that's not only giving you problems as a runner, but also as a receiver coming out the backfield. He's a big-time mismatch if you're trying to cover him with a linebacker or a safety. Big-time mismatch.
So I'm all for taking a running back in this class, because we talk about this all the time, Mike.
And he would be a good fit with the Saints.
You want to build your roster through the strengths of a draft. This is a loaded defensive line class. You got to get at least one defensive lineman. It's also a loaded running back class. And, Mike, you've also mentioned day two is going to be the day where a ton of running backs start peeling off the board. Like, I'm going to be interested by the end of it, you know, late April, once we're done with the draft, count how many running backs get selected in rounds two and three. There's going to be that run on them. I don't know how many are going in day one. Ashton Jeanty obviously is going to be a first-round pick. I don't know if Amarian Hampton's going to be. I know Daniel Jeremiah had three running backs going in round one in his latest mock. I don't think it's going to be that many, because teams know how good this running back class is, and there's like 10 guys that could potentially go on day two. If, of course, one goes on day one, you're going to see a ton peel off. And maybe the third round, because the Saints do have an extra third round pick as part of the Marshawn Lattimore trade, is where the Saints can target a running back in this class. I think that would make a lot of sense.
Charlie, last night, LSU took care of business against a really good Dallas Baptist team.
Oh, yeah.
And we talked about it, that this would be a big test for LSU. Their pitching was just unbelievable last night. Now, the game lasted forever because DBU keep pulling their pitches.
Yeah.
But, man, you saw the pitching talent on LSU's baseball team on display last night.
Yeah, we've been gushing about it, Mike, in the early season. And as you mentioned, on full display, D1 Baseball has a great tweet about it. LSU baseball's pitching staff has been dominant early. A combined team ERA, 1.52. Get this. A 0.74 whip, for those that don't know what whip is, walks and hits per innings pitch. It's less than one. They're not even allowing a runner on base every inning. A 36.3% strikeout percentage, a 6.8% walk percentage, which when we had Scott Sanders on last night, he said that's been the key. The strikeout to walk percentage has been elite so far for LSU. And a 143 batting average allowed. As a staff, that's not just like one ace. That's your entire pitching staff early on this season. They've been outstanding. And Dallas Baptist, to Jay's point, to Jay Johnson's point, they're going to win 40-plus games this year. They're going to be a top 25 team all season long. They have an elite squad. And their offense has popped. They call them the Dallas Bombers when they're going nuts. And they got a couple last night. You know, they got a hold of a couple. But that was it. Outside of that, LSU gave up three hits last night, Mike.
Yep.
Dallas Baptist, who has a very strong offense, went 3 of 30 at the plate. LSU's pitching staff, which was Connor Ware, who Jay has also gushed about as being one of the best pitchers on the staff, he's a midweek starter for this team. I would hazard a guess that he would be a weekend starter at 90% of other programs in the country. Behind him, Zach Cowan is a bullpen pitcher for this LSU team, people will forget Zach Helen was the ace of a Wofford staff that made the NCAA tournament this past year. He comes to LSU and he's a midweek bullpen pitcher. And then Cason Evans, the freshman, gets the save with two hitless innings.
Yeah.
I mean, it was as impressive a performance as you've seen all season long when, you know, it was hyped up, Mike, because it was a top 20 matchup, one of the best midweek matchups of the season on paper. And LSU was just in control. They took the early lead. The pitching staff really handled Dallas Baptist offense. And, I mean, yes, if you're going to kind of nitpick here, LSU left a lot of players on base last night. And they missed a couple opportunities. But at the same time, did you ever feel like that game was in reach for DBU?
Never.
As soon as they went up 5-0, like, yes, DBU answers with a 3-spot. But at the same time, you just kind of counted on LSU's pitching to kind of lock them down. And that's exactly what they did. Mike, the reason we're so bullish on this LSU baseball team is that pitching staff will play anywhere. I mean, you get to SEC play, LSU's going to have a lot of pitching advantages against some of the best teams in the country. And that's why they're the number two team in the nation right now.
We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 and my old buddy Pete Jenkins, legendary defensive line coach, talking about Bo Davis and also some of the defensive linemen in this 2025 draft class right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long in studio and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line, the legend himself, Pete Jenkins, defensive line coach and all of 28 years.
Wait a minute now.
28 years old, Pete. How about that?
Careful. I didn't know what you were going to say, Mike. Defensive line coach and
I'll cut you a little bit of slack. I'll cut you some. They cut it with me, so I'm going to cut you some. Coach, I know you always talk about, as a coach, you really a teacher. That's your job. If it's out on the practice field or during games, you're a teacher. And Bo Davis getting the job with the Saints. Now, he's had some experience before in the NFL with the Lions, and he was with Jacksonville for a year. But I know you've always praised Bo to me. And doing an interview with Bo a few years back, I said, you know, who was the guy that influenced you the most? He said, see that little short guy with the white hair? That's him, Pete Jenkins. He's the one. So give us a little bit about Bo Jenkins, about Bo Davis, and about how well you think he will handle things at the NFL level, because it is a different type athlete now.
It is. You know, I think, Mike, first of all, I think he's going to do very well. I was sad that he would leave LSU. But I was happy he did. He went to the Saints. You know, it was kind of a mixed bag with me, and it wasn't an easy decision for Bo. We've been talking about this over a week, and it was really funny, Mike. He called me, and it was about 10:30. And as you know, I'm usually asleep about at 10:30 at night. You know, but he woke me up, and he said, "Coach Pete, I need to talk to you about something." And he realized I was about half asleep, which I was, maybe whole asleep. But anyways, he said, "I'll call you in the morning." And we hung the phone up or put the phone down, you know, and I couldn't go to sleep. And I told Donna, I said, "Bo's got something on his mind." So I called him back and we talked. And we talked a couple of times about it last week. It wasn't, what I'm saying to you, though, Mike, it wasn't an easy decision for Bo. He put a lot of thought into it, and really, you know, he was excited. But he, you know, the boy played here, and he loves LSU, and it was a tough decision. He'll do very well, though, Mike. He gets along with the players good. I talked to Coach Kelly Monday, and he told me, he said, you know, Bo did, under the circumstances, Bo did a tremendous job here. And he said, you know, Bo, the players really responded to Bo, and he said, you know, he did a really good job. I don't want to lose him. And Bo and I talked about Coach Kelly. He really liked, you know, he shared my feelings about Kelly. Kelly was really good to me, Mike. And from what Bo tells me, Kelly's been really good to him. So I think it was a decision that wasn't an easy decision for Bo to make. And I said, what about the money? And he said, the money's pretty close, not even factoring in the money on the decision. So, but he will do good. I'm excited for him to be at the Saints, and I know he'll do a good job with those guys.
Coach,
now, you asked me about something else. So he is a, you know, Bo's kind of a rough looking guy. He's not a guy that's immediately friendly. It takes Bo a few minutes to kind of warm up to people and everything. But once you get to know the guy, there's a lot of depth there, boy. And there's a lot of, he's just a good person. He don't hang that phone up. He doesn't say, Coach Pete, I love you. And, you know, I mean, he is, that's just kind of the way he was. And his dad was military and was retired and taught ROTC. And Bo was kind of raised in a regimented home. His mama was a teacher. And they're both gone now. But they were good people. I enjoyed being around them when I recruited him. And you know, I'm very proud of what Bo has become. He's been a good father. He got lucky like I did and married a good gal. And he's been a good husband and a good family guy. So I'm proud for him, and I'm proud for the Saints, Mike.
Kevin Peoples is a guy you and I have spoke about. And a lot of people maybe don't know him. I think he'll play a little bit, certainly more prominent role coaching along the defensive line. But you've really praised Kevin Peoples for what he's been able to do with the edge rushers. And you saw it last year with Savion and then Braden Swinson. Listen, you could have gave me five names. Swinson, I wouldn't have been on that list.
He came out of nowhere. I was on the team with him the year before. And hardly knew the guy. I think Kevin, you know, Kevin coaches the ends, and he's a very accomplished football coach, Mike. I mean, Kevin, I think Kevin's one of the best in the country. I said to Coach Kelly, you get those two hired, and you'll have two as good ones as anybody in the United States of America. And as you know, I travel around. I know a lot of college coaches because of the opportunity people give me to come to schools and work and everything. So, but Kevin is good. I'm really happy. I talked with him at length today, and they're doing a good job. I know guys that they're interviewed. They've been Zooming interviews with people this week, and they're going to do a good job. They're going to do a thorough job of getting a replacement for Bo. I tell you another thing, Mike, about Bo. Bo brings some quiet toughness with him, okay? And by that, I mean he is not, you know, he just has a way about him. Coach Saban told me he lost Bo to Texas, and then he got Bo back. And he told me once, Coach Saban told me once, he said, we have been a tougher defense since Bo has been back. And you wouldn't think that about he's not a rah rah guy or what. It's just the demands and I tell you, Cochran. You know the name Cochran, that he just got the West Alabama job.
Yeah,
he was a strength coach here at LSU, and then he went to Alabama and was the strength coach over there for years. And he told me a story, Mike, about Bo's first day back at Alabama, coming back from Texas. They were doing, at the end of the program, they were doing a tug-of-war, competitive tug-of-war with the offensive and defensive line. And Cochran told me that the offensive line embarrassed the defensive line and had been doing it on a daily basis. And he said after they competed, Bo called the defensive line over. And he quietly said to him, that is the last time that is ever going to happen. And Cochran was laughing about that the offensive line had hardly won one since that time. He just brings some toughness with him, and he'll bring the same thing to the Saints.
Coach, so you can eliminate one name off that list, and that would be you?
Yeah.
Yeah, because listen, I told Charlie I might have to leave. I'll go drive you around in the golf cart. I mean, listen, I think we could maybe get it done.
Hey, let me tell you, Mike, it's been so funny today. It's been so funny. I've had texts. I mean, you would believe. You know the boy that played for us, Makai Wingo?
Yes, Makai Wingo. Yeah.
First text I got this morning, he said, Coach, get them cleats back out. LSU needs you. You got to come back again. I wrote him back, and I said, Makai, trust me, I ain't doing it. The tank is too damn empty. I can't do it. I can't do it again. But I bet you I got at least six texts today, people telling me, you know, joking with me about coming back. And I know that's a pattern in my life, but I don't think I can do it this time, Mike. I think I'm too far gone. So this boy, Taj Lupoy, who is the defensive coordinator in Oregon, he writes me. It is what he wrote me this morning at 10 o'clock. And for the fifth time, the legend returns. Pete Jenkins, next D-line coach at LSU. Let's go. And I wrote back, ha ha. Not this time, my friend.
that's a great line. That's a great one.
I think I'm going too far down the road, Mike.
But, Pete, listen, I'll be honest with you. I got about four texts, people saying, is Pete? I was like, wait a minute. I said, I will ask him, but I'm going to tell you probably a 98% no on that, because I know you and I had talked one time, and God bless him, Ed Daniels was with us, and he was like, Pete, are you ready to say never coach again? And you said, Ed, no comment. And that was like, wait a minute.
Oh, boy, I tell you. You know, I was the oldest. I got a friend named Rick Trickett. You might have heard of him. He's coached for years. He coached at LSU 1 year under Coach Saban, but didn't stay but 1 year. But Trickett called me, and we worked at Auburn, and we worked at LSU together. He called me, and he said, hey, you just took my damn title away. I said, what's that? He said, I was the oldest position coach in the NCAA until your ass came back to work. Don't worry, Rick. You can get it back as soon as the season's over.
Coach.
There ain't no place I love on earth any better than I do LSU. But the answer to that is anything I can do to help, I will do. But being the damn full-time coach, I can't do that again.
Coach, I know you spent a lot of time at University of Georgia and close with Kirby Smart there. Man, the one thing I give those guys, one, they can play ball and they're talented. But when they go to this combine stuff, they wipe the slate clean. I mean, you got some big-time athletes on that defensive side to football. Oh, my heavens. And those guys, I don't know who's training them for the combine, but they do one hell of a job.
Yeah, and they've been really blessed with some great athletes over. You know, you and I were talking about prior to the Super Bowl, and you know, Mike, I thought about it during the Super Bowl. I said, yeah, I wonder if Mike remembers that conversation we had, because let me tell you, Philadelphia has done a hell of a job of loading that roster, man. And I said to you, Mike, their offensive and defensive lines are, you know, they're better than the combination of both those sides of the ball. They're better than anybody in the NFL. And, you know, you and I mentioned also the kid from Milton Williams, the kid from
Louisiana Tech,
He had a hell of a night, did he not?
He sure did.
I mean, he showed off in that ball game, and he's a kid that I have had the opportunity to work with a couple of summers, you know, and I hope I get a chance to work with him again. But he you know, he was kind of unheralded guy. You didn't know much about him, but he has really become a dominant player in the league. And Rick, you know, Coach Reed, I texted him after the game, and Donna said, "What are you going to say?" I said, "Hell, I don't know what to say." You know, I just wrote sorry, Coach, because it's the only thing I could think. But he texted me, interesting comment that he texted me back. He said, you know, I think in the long run, this is going to help us. I think we'll play like a hungrier team. I do think that the Eagles were hungrier on that night. And it showed in the game. I thought they played with more hunger, more want to, than Kansas City did. I think Kansas City got a little spoiled and a little fat and happy and everything, you know. But he'll get it fixed. I say fixed. They lost one game and all that. But that was his reply to me. I thought you'd find that interesting.
Yeah.
It might be a blessing in disguise.
One of the things with this coach, I think it goes back to the fundamentals of football. Doesn't matter who you got at quarterback. If you don't win up front, you got no shot. None.
You don't. It doesn't matter. I mean, you have the greatest, and that may be the greatest quarterback in ball. But, you know, he was ineffective because their tackles, especially, boy, they just couldn't keep them off of him. You know, it reminded me, Mike, of the year they lost the Super Bowl to Tampa Bay. If you'll remember, it was the same thing. Their tackles, Tampa Bay's edge guys, just kill their tackles. And he had a difficult time in that ball game. This one, and what impressed me about Philly, their tackles, their inside rushers, did a really great job of maintaining lane discipline to the quarterback. So the edge rushers would make Mahomes step up, and that's when he got sacked a lot, when he stepped up, because the tackles were so disciplined in their rush lanes. And, it wasn't even close. I mean, from the very outset, I thought the Eagles was playing harder and hungrier than Kansas City was.
Coach, before we let you run, I remember when we had you on last summer to talk about Bo making his return to LSU. You mentioned a story where he was at Texas and the Texas kids were kind of cutting up after a blowout loss, and Bo Davis was the one that stepped up and really kind of unleashed on him a little bit. I wanted to,
he did.
Yeah, and I want to get your thoughts. Like, do you have any other stories with Coach Davis? And because the one thing that keeps popping up every time you look up Coach Davis and this hire for the Saints is respect. Everyone respects Coach Davis. Everyone that knows football respects Coach Davis, and it's a slam dunk hire for the Saints.
Yeah, ain't no question. I think he's one of the better ones around. So when he went to Detroit, Paul Pasolini, who's a name in football, you guys might be know who that is. He was a coordinator at Detroit, and he called me and he asked me to recommend somebody who and I told him right away. I said, "Now look, if you want somebody to be pretty and elegant and get on TV and look good doing and all that kind of stuff," I said, the guy I'm going to give you probably is not the guy, because he don't enjoy stuff like that. But if you want somebody to win the line of scrimmage against the run on the goal line and in short yardage and do a good job of pressuring the quarterback and doing a good job of staying disciplined in his lanes, Bo Davis is the guy you want to hire. Well, Coach Saban was trying to get Bo back at Alabama. And, Matt Patricia would not release him. He had 1 year, and Matt had 1 year left in Detroit. They were about to fire Matt, and everybody knew that. But Matt had one guy on defense, and that was Bo. Paul had retired, and he had Bo. And Coach Saban called Matt personally and asked him to release Bo. And do you know Matt would not release him? He would not release him. He kept Bo there, and of course, they got fired at the end of the season. But he everywhere he's been, he has done a good job. And, Mike, you're going to enjoy watching him in Thibodeau in June, too.
Hey, I thought about that. I told Charlie, because a college coach, you can't come to the Louisiana Line Camp.
That's right.
These NCAA
That's
rules.
Right.
But as a pro coach, you can. So that opens it up. Last question for you. One of your guys, too, he just got on with Buffalo, Ryan Nielsen. And Ryan's a guy that I know you've been real close to for many, many years. He was defensive line coach here with the Saints. Yeah. He went with Atlanta,
and
Jacksonville.
And did a good job, Mike, and did a damn good job, too. He really did. I was happy for him. I got involved in that one a little bit because there were two teams. The Bills were one of them, which, you know, I worked with McDermott, and McDermott was calling me trying to help him hire Ryan. The other team, the defense coordinator on the other team, and I were real close, and he was trying to hire Ryan. And so McDermott won out on the thing, but I think it's going to really help the Bills. It may be the thing that kind of gets them over the top, because that boy is a good teacher boy. He is really a good technician, and I was excited for him and everything. So, yeah, I was really happy for that, Mike. And, by the way, Mike, he kicks me right afterwards and told me, said, get ready, I'm coming back to work at camp.
Okay, because we missed him the last couple years.
His wife, unfortunately, has been dealing with some health problems.
Oh, okay, I didn't realize that.
And that's the reason Ryan hadn't been to camp. But he told me, in fact, he told me he's going to bring his little boy with him and everything. But he'd be there, and Bo will be there. So that'll be two real good additions to, Bo worked there three years ago.
Yes, he did.
And Ryan has missed the last 2 years. I'll be happy to get those guys back, though. They'll be a real asset to the camp, both of them.
Coach, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon, man. Always and thrilled
always
to have you on and all your insights.
You.
And when you decide to come out of retirement, let me go. Let me know about it. I'll get the golf cart. I'll drive the golf cart. Charlie can run sports talk sort of by himself for the 2 hours.
Okay. Thanks, Coach.
Hey, y'all stay tuned and see, and I'll let you guys know, okay?
All right. Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Pete Jenkins, legendary defensive line coach. And, boy, you talk about a connect-the-dots guy. That's a connect-the-dots guy.
He's got connections with everyone.
Everybody, and they calling Pete, and sometimes he'll tell me, Mike, hang on. I got this damn head coach want to talk to me about something. He said, I'll call you right back. And then he calls me back about 3 hours later. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTillo along with Charlie Long and joined by Steve Geller. It's our triple option feature. Steven, you first.
Well, guys, it was reported today the league ownership with the NFL Players Association have agreed to a 2025 salary cap that is $279.2 million. What do you know? It's a new record. So where does that leave the Saints right now? Well, the site Over the Cap has New Orleans with $329.6 million tied up with dead money left over from the previous contracts with Marshawn Lattimore, Michael Thomas, and Jameis Winston. They also rolled over a little more than $2.9 million in unspent cap space from 2024 to work with this year. That means the Saints are now in the red by about $47.5 million. Now, there's still plenty of work to be done here, obviously, but that is a huge upgrade from like more than just a few weeks ago when everybody was talking about the Saints being $70 million over the projected cap. So 47.5, a lot better number to work with here. And I know Mickey Loomis and crew will be hard at work doing it.
Thank God they don't do my taxes or balance my checkbook. Charlie?
What do you say, Mike? It's the 2 stitches on the 5-stitch injury.
That's all it is.
Yeah, how about that? Guys, I already used the stat from D1 about the LSU pitching stat, so I'm going with a little bit of a curveball here. ESPN Stats and Info has a really fun stat here, guys. Rick Pitino, the first head coach in Division I history to win a regular season conference title with 5 different schools. He did it with Boston University, he did it with Kentucky, Louisville, Iona, and most recently with St. John's, locking up the Big East title this year, guys. St. John's, the number 7 ranked team in the country right now, and come March Madness time, that's a team to watch, because Pitino, man, he's got an illustrious career, and you just feel like St. John's and the Red Storm are going to be a tough out come March Madness.
Had a texter ask me about Cam Scatabo, the running back from Arizona State, and I saw him at Sacramento State where he was as good a player there as he was at Arizona State. The competition was just a little bit different, but and where I got him projected, he would fall into that late second, very early third round pick, what we had talked about before, that day 2 selection. Not only is he a really tough inside runner, he's got enough speed. He sort of mesmerizes you a little bit in that you don't think he's that fast until he's running away from you. He He's also a really, really good receiver coming out of the backfield. He's got some of the softest hands to catch the ball, and then he's straight up the field. And if he tries to run you over or he tries to run around you because he's that type of speed, I just think running backs are devalued a little bit and always will. I think big linemen, they'll always get the advantage there along with the quarterback position. But I look at Cam as a guy that probably that late second into the round three type selection, and he can do a lot of business. He ends up in Kansas City, that would be about right, you know, because they're looking for a guy that can carry a little bit more of the load than Isaiah Pacheco can, and he'd be a nice fit there.
Go ahead, Steve.
I was going to say, I saw a mock draft that actually had the Saints landing Scattaboo. That makes a ton of more sense to me than using the ninth pick on Jeanty.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
And I think Scattaboo had, you know, people knew about him, but his coming out party against Texas, guys, in the college football playoff was the real moment that, like, okay, this
kid's
serious.
He's going up against NFL players.
And he shined. He was fantastic in that game. So a lot of people are now projecting him. You know, the tape alone and the numbers that he put up at Arizona State, I agree with you, Mike, he's a day two pick. It's just a matter of if he's a second or maybe an early third round pick. But he could be in play for the Saints if they decide to use that third-round pick if he's there.
Right? Yeah, and that was a thought when we were talking, you know, a little earlier about other backs and Woody Marks being one of them. Would Cam Scattaboo still be around? Because I do think this draft, you're going to have a lot of offensive, defensive linemen sort of eaten up very quickly. Big man, hey, listen, the Greeks settled this years ago. Got a chance to pick a really talented big man, a really talented small guy. You go with the big dude. Well, they're going to go with the big dudes. But Cam Scattaboo's going to help whoever picks him. And he's a really versatile back. And one thing for sure, wherever he goes, he's going to have more jerseys sold there than the first-round pick guy, unless it's Cam Ward or somebody like that. Because that guy is going to be a fan favorite, and he can play football at the highest level. We'll be back to finish it off here on Sports Talk right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870. Want to thank Pete Jenkins, always a favorite of mine, and also the people that listen out there. They've told me, you got to get Pete on a more regular basis, and we'll try to get Pete on as much as we can. He does always got great insights in the game itself and connected to so many different guys that are coaching at the collegiate and also at the professional level. Steve, tell us what you got going on at a little after 6:20.
Yeah, one of our favorites to talk to when it comes to hoops, NBA basketball writer Ali Cosell joins us, helping us preview the Pelicans' four-game Mardi Gras road trip, back-to-back games in Phoenix starting tonight, which you can hear on WWL, 7:30 pregame, 8 p.m. tip-off in Phoenix on WWL. What is up? Welcome on into this Thursday edition of Sports Talk, February the 27th. My, how this week has flown. Getting ready for some Pelicans basketball this evening. After the first break, we'll be talking to Ali Cosell, NBA writer covering the Pels. Four-game road trip begins tonight with back-to-back games in Phoenix, taking on the Suns. Last night, we had some action on WWL with the LSU baseball team that was taking on Dallas Baptist. And, you know, it was the first big test for the Tigers, taking on a ranked opponent. But, man, oh, man, LSU had their way with Dallas Baptist, took an early lead on them, end up getting a 7-3 victory. Tigers took control at a 4-run fourth inning, which included a 2-run home run from Daniel Dickinson.
The 3-2, this one hit down the left field line. Can it stay fair? It's towards the wall, and it is out of here. Home run down the left field line.
And what do you know, Daniel Dickinson, he would also account for the final out of the game, which sealed the victory for LSU.
Ground ball off the glove of Evans. It's going to be a tough play for Dickinson, the second baseman. He gets to it, and he throws to first for the final out of the ball game, and the Tigers win. Improved to 8-1 by knocking off 19th-ranked Dallas Baptist, 7-3 to final. Outstanding pitching here tonight for LSU as they allow just three hits, 13 strikeouts. Darren Curiel, a huge night tonight with three runs scored. Daniel Dickinson, a two-run homer. And yeah, the 15 runners left on base, not great, but it's a victory.
Jeff Palermo there with the call on the LSU Sports Radio Network. Also, Bear Jones went 2-for-4 in the game, had an RBI, also 2 walks. And you heard there the only negative of the night was the so many runners left on base for the Tigers. But, man, oh, man, Charlie, what happened with Dallas Baptist pitching? So many free passes.
It's their midweek staff. It's not everyone has LSU's pitching rotation where you can throw Connor Ware and Zach Cowan and Cason Evans in a midweek game, Steve. So you weren't going to see their best guys, but the way that LSU dominated on the mound against a good Dallas Baptist offense, the bats are always there, right?
Yeah.
So you didn't face their best arms, but you faced their best bats. And LSU on the mound took that test head on, and they were fantastic. There were 2 mistake pitches that entire night, and they were sent to the second deck.
Right, they made a pay on them.
Field. The Dallas Bombers, as they sometimes call them, like, they got some big bats in that lineup, and they crushed a couple pitches, but that was it. I mean, outside of that, LSU's pitching staff was in control the entire night, Steve.
Yeah, you mentioned Connor Ware, 4 innings, gave up 1 earned run, struck out 6. Zach Cowan, 3 innings pitch, gave up an earned run and struck out 5 on the evening. Interested to see what they do now. The LSU team stays in Texas. They'll play in Frisco tomorrow against Kansas State. That'll be a 2 p.m. first pitch over on the Bet, New Orleans 92.9 FM and 1350 AM. Definitely be tuned in to that, and we'll give you updates throughout the show tomorrow on Sports Talk when we get things going. Tonight, the LSU women's basketball team is in action. The 7th-ranked Lady Tigers will be facing 20th-ranked Alabama. LSU's 27-2 on the season, and a win tonight would give them their most wins ever in a regular season. Another big accomplishment potentially on tap for Kim Mulkey. Alabama, meanwhile, looking at them, they are 22-6, 9-5 in the SEC. So some LSU action to watch this tonight, as well as the Pelicans, which we will have coming up 7:30 pregame coverage, 8 o'clock tip-off in Phoenix against the Suns, and another, not really a baseball series here when you play them back-to-back, I guess, Charlie.
Yeah, back-to-back is a back-to-back. Real quick, Steve, before we get into Ali and that interview about the Pelicans, I wanted to bring up some numbers from last night. I'm looking at the comparison stat sheet for DBU versus LSU this past night. Overall hitting, as I mentioned, DBU 3 of 30 in the game. They hit 100. And I mentioned this to Mike last hour. With Connor Ware, the JUCO transfer, Jay Johnson gushed about the guy. He said that he would be a weekend rotation pitcher on a bunch of different teams in the country. You know, he was one of the best pitchers that they had in the preseason in spring ball and, you know, or not spring ball, in fall ball, like kind of leading up into the season. And he's pitching in the midweeks for him right now because their weekend rotation of Cade Anderson and Anthony Ianson and Chase Shores is already so stout, right? You have that guy pitching midweek games, and then you have Zach Cowan coming out of the bullpen for midweek games. And Jay saw something there. I brought that up yesterday ahead of the game. I figured that, you know, it was what happened the midweek prior, you know, where he threw Connor Ware as the starter, and then he had Cowan be the first guy out of the bullpen. It's a little bit of a different look where we have Ware, who's like a taller left-handed pitcher. He's, I think, 6'4". He throws from the left side. And then Zach Cowan's a little bit shorter. He's like 5'11". He throws from the right side. It's a little bit of a different look to kind of keep an offense off balance. So those two combined to throw 7 great innings last night. And then Cason Evans, when his name gets called upon, because Cooper Williams gave up a couple walks in the 8th inning, Cason Evans comes up and he just locks down DBU for the
innings.
Final 2 innings.
Yeah.
I don't think he's given up a hit this year, by the way. And Cason Evans, I think, has thrown like 6 or so innings so far. Fantastic start to your freshman campaign with LSU. So those 3 guys, I would take them over any midweek, you know, rotation of the country. Because Zach Cowan, as I mentioned with Mike, was the ace of the Wofford staff that made it to regional play last year. And he's pitching out of the bullpen on the midweek for this LSU staff. If that doesn't tell you how good this group is, I don't know what does. They're elite. And so it was on full display. Their first test against a good offense in Dallas Baptist passed with flying colors, in my opinion. A couple things here as well, Steve. As I mentioned, I was looking at the numbers. Dallas Baptist 0 of 8 with 2 outs last night.
Oof.
Here's the thing. With runners on base, they only had 6 opportunities last night with a runner on base. LSU, in comparison, had 26. So, you know, that kind of shows you that. They were 1-6 with runners on, 0-4 with runners in scoring position. You know, they were just elite last night, the LSU pitching staff against a good DBU offense.
13 strikeouts.
13 strikeouts to 3 hits. that plays anywhere,
right,
Steve? So, you know, this upcoming weekend against Kansas State, Nebraska, Sam Houston at the Frisco Classic, I'm really looking forward to it. Kansas State is the one that intrigues me the most. When we talked with Aaron Fitt about them, you know, he mentioned Jacob Frost, their Friday guy, had like a 7.5 ERA last year, but he just locked down Arkansas this past weekend, which was part of their three-game set that they won. They beat Arkansas, they beat Michigan, and they beat TCU all at Globe Life Field this past weekend. Aaron Fitt got to see all of them, and he mentioned with Jacob Frost, he's a lefty that kind of throws upwards of 91 to 95 with a fastball, and then they follow him up with some kind of the guys that don't have as much velo, but they play off their changeup and their sliders. So it's a little bit of a different look out of the bullpen for them as well. It's going to be interesting to see how LSU matches up with them at the plate, because, you know, they did lock down Arkansas this past week, so they're obviously solid, and we'll see how LSU matches up tomorrow. And then Nebraska, who was a top 25 team, and Sam Houston, who's got a great program. So as I mentioned yesterday, Steve, it felt like these four games, DBU, Kansas State, Nebraska, and Sam Houston, were the four premium matchups in non-conference play, and they all just happened to come on the same week.
Looking here at the attendance for yesterday, they have it at 5,794. Seemed like a lot more to me. I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's a huge ballpark, though.
Yeah, Globe Life Field has 40,000 capacity, so it probably was, it felt more, but maybe it just didn't fill out as much.
What's funny is I did see, you know, some of the media, like our, you know, Koki Riley, who we talked to from The Advocate, saying he was sitting on the moon watching the game.
Yeah, exactly. No, Globe Life is a cool place, man. And I'm a Ranger hater because I'm an Astros fan, but I can admit that they have a nice park.
Yeah, it pains you to say that. I feel you. Going to the Minnesota Vikings stadium, you know, obviously there's no love lost there between the Saints and Vikings, but I had to give it to them that they got a great looking place. And I don't know, a lot of people think the, you know, blowing the horn with the skull is cheesy. It was a pretty cool atmosphere to witness there when I got to see the Saints taking on the Minnesota Vikings.
Well, you're a Eagles fan as well, Steve.
Oh, yeah.
Every time I think of the skull chant, I think of the Eagles fans doing the Foles chant. Like in the NFC Championship game after the meaningless miracle,
yes.
They play and they got blown out.
I like
out.
That, the meaningless miracle.
I mean, that's what it is, because they got blown out by the Eagles in the very next game, and the Eagles fans were doing the Foles, Foles, Foles. Oh, man, it's great.
Yeah, the Minnesota mishap, whatever. There was no miracle going on there.
Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. It was disgusting. Anyway, we're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll get into more of Pelicans basketball. NBA writer Ali Cosell will join us. You can sound off on the Oaken Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. It's 504-260-1870. Taking a break here on Sports Talk, but be right back on WWL. Welcome back into our Thursday edition of Sports Talk. Getting ready for some Pelicans basketball on 8 o'clock tip-off on 870 AM and 105.3. 3FM. To help us do some bird watching, we got Ali Cosell, NBA writer, who covers the Pels. Ali, how you been, man? You enjoying your Mardi Gras?
Good evening, Steve. Yeah, absolutely, right? This weather finally shaped up.
Amen.
The past few days, it's great. And it's supposed to continue, it sounds like.
Last two victories for the Pels, taking down the Spurs in the Smoothie King Center. Just before we get into some bird talk, curious to know if you think we've seen the last of Chris Paul in the arena. I know there was a lot of speculation about this could be his final season.
Yeah, it could very well be, right? I mean, he's pretty much accomplished everything but win the championship.
Right.
And I'm guessing that he probably doesn't think that he can even be a main cog for a team to do that anymore. So it's probably lost its luster, I guess. So, yeah, I hope it isn't. But then again, you know, everything can't last forever, right? All good things can't last forever. So one thing I would like to see, though, is I hope New Orleans, when he does retire, they honor him in some way, right? Maybe hang his jersey or something in the Raptors. Because if you think about it, he left on way better terms than, say, Anthony Davis or Eric Gordon, right? Some other guys in the past. And moreover, I mean, he was like an MVP caliber type player, right? I mean, he should have won it that one year that Kobe sold it from him. So, yeah, he should be celebrated. But let's wait until we get that official word.
Yeah, that would be nice if we can get the Pels basketball back to where it once was. I know that's when I was like first moved down to the New Orleans area, and just it was tons of excitement. The arena was rocking, and you know, you had the Crescent City connection going. This Pels team this year, we know about the issues they've had. The injuries have been a burden on them, and luckily, man, it was scary to see Trey Murphy going down late in the game against the Spurs, but he ended up being all right. But two in a row now for the Birds, three of their last four games, and now beginning this four-game Mardi Gras road trip against the Phoenix Suns team that we know has just been struggling mightily, and you know they don't seem to have an answer for what's going on right now. What are your takes on this matchup going into the Suns game? I know, unfortunately, one of the new additions in Kelly Olynyk won't be available in this, and he's definitely provided a surprisingly big presence right away.
Yeah, Kelly Olynyk's been a great surprise, right? I think we all expected more from Bruce Brown in terms of contributions and impact, but it's been the other way around. So I think the Pelicans have found, honestly, their backup center for at least next season, right? He's got one more year on his deal anyways, and he seems to be fitting in so well, right, with the guys where I'm hearing in practice, for instance, he's pointing things out to brand-new teammates, right? Telling coaches, hey, maybe we should do it this way, right? So sounds like he's an important cog already, and he can spread the floor, right? Career 37% three-point shooter. He's got that chemistry, it looks like, with Zion, right? I mean, I can't get it out of my head, him throwing a half-court lob, alley-oop lob to Zion where he threw down easily. So love everything you've seen from him. But as far as tonight's matchup, yeah, you know, the Suns are more disappointing to me, right, compared to the Pelicans. Pelicans, they got destroyed by injury, right? When you just look and see how many of their players have played compared to the Suns, top three players for the Pels in terms of games played, Eve Missy, Javonte Green, Jeremiah Robinson. When you look at Phoenix, they don't have as many issues, right? Devin Booker's played over 50 games. I think Kevin Durant's at about 45, right? Zion just passed the 20-game played barrier. So they're a team that what we've been hearing, right, they're just not getting along. The chemistry is non-existent, and things have progressively gotten worse. So what? They're 11th right now, three games out of, I think, the play-in tournament even. So they're not heading anywhere fast. But you got to think, with a team with those three stars, right, including Bradley Beal, they're going to want to at least try and make an effort. So I think they're going to put up a good fight against the Pelicans where, yeah, they're coming in with a two-game winning streak. But now that you're already shorthanded without, you know, Kelly Olynyk, yeah, it's probably going to be, you know, a little bit of a rude awakening to start this road trip.
Here's the thing about the Suns that's really intriguing to me. It feels like it's been a slice of humble pie for Matt Ishbia, where,
yeah,
you know, he trades all those picks to Brooklyn, and then he goes and says, oh, I want Bradley Beal, we'll take on that money. And, you know, they move on from Frank Vogel, and they bring in Mike Budenholzer, and they get off to an okay start. But this February collapse, Ollie, just, I mean, we got to call it what it is. They're 2-9 this month. And that includes losses to Portland. That includes losses to San Antonio, who we just saw the Pelicans wax in back-to-back games. A loss to Toronto. Most recently, the overtime loss to Memphis just that on Tuesday night. They're now 27-31. As you mentioned, they're out of the play-in tournament. They're 11th in the Western Conference. And for a team led by star power like Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, like that's just a smack to the face. I mean, for the expectations that the Suns have, I agree with you, Ali. I think they're one of the most disappointing teams in the NBA.
Yeah, I saw that game where they lost to the Spurs, right? I think that was the first game San Antonio was without Victor Wembanyama. And I was just shocked to see how poorly they were playing, right? Chris Paul was the most fiery guy on the court. And he normally is almost anyways, but he was getting the face of Kevin Durant and all these guys. And they really didn't have much pushback. It's really sad to see, right? I mean, the way Devin Booker's in the prime of his career, Kevin Durant's one of the all-time greats. And Matt Ishbia, you're right. He thought he knew what he was doing, but when you sent out Chris Paul unceremoniously, and you traded DeAndre Ayton just to get Bradley Beal on your team, gave away that young talent, right? Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson. Yeah, I think he turned that franchise much for the worse.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And then Ali, looking a little bit further down their road trip, because they do have the game tonight and tomorrow against Phoenix, but then they have the matchup on Sunday against Utah, and then wrapping up the road trip on Mardi Gras Day at Los Angeles, the Lakers. First and foremost, the Utah Jazz, your thoughts on them? Obviously, they've had a tough year. We remember when the Jazz came to New Orleans for back-to-back games. It was around the time the blizzard was happening. I remember we were stuck in the studio, and we were watching the second game specifically, where the Pelicans made that gigantic comeback. You know, I think CJ McCollum had a monster performance in that game, 45 points. Yeah, there it is. And they won that game in overtime. Your thoughts on the Utah Jazz, and then we'll get to the Lakers in just a little bit.
Yeah, they're feisty, right? I mean, they've had recent wins, what, against the Rockets? I know they beat the Lakers, too, and they've had one other decent win, I want to say. So they've got enough talent to where they can win most nights, right? I mean, Kessler, he's as solid of a center that's not one of those elite centers, right, as you can find in the league. And then Lauri Markkanen, he's been playing much better of late. Their young guys are kind of growing up, like Collier, their rookie, Keontae George, they're contributing. I just like the way they play. They play tough. I mean, you mentioned they've given the Pelicans trouble in recent years, and you kind of see why. Kelly Olynyk was on some of these right pass versions of the Jazz too, so he had a kind of a hand in some of those Pelicans losses. But yeah, this is a team that, you know, it's a lot like the Pelicans. They're trying to position themselves for the future, right? So you want to not win too many games this year, get another good draft pick on board, and add to kind of the talent that's already in-house. And like I said, Danny Ainge is running the show. You saw how he built up the Boston Celtics, right, with Tatum and Brown. And he's largely the architect of all the success they're having now. So I wouldn't be surprised if he eventually does it with Utah too. So, but yeah, that matchup though, Pelicans always seem to struggle over there in Utah, right? And then you've got the Lakers. I mean, Pelicans could conceivably lose all four of these games on the road, which wouldn't be the first time this season.
Ollie, before Charlie gets into you with the Lakers, just curious, with no Olynyk tonight, do we know who's going to be in the starting lineup? Is it going to end up being Carlo Mackovich?
Yeah, probably will be, right? Because I know that Willie wants to keep kind of the big ball.
Hey, it's been working.
It's worked so well.
Yeah.
Right? The rebounding's there, the points in the paint. Zion can be, he's your point guard. CJ's at the two, Trey at the three. And so they like that configuration. So, yeah, fully expect for that tonight.
Yeah, and I think it's been working as far as rebounding as well. Those two games against the Spurs, Ollie, I remember we were talking with Will Guillory about this other day. After the first win, it was, I think, like a 60-something to 30-something advantage on the boards for the Pelicans. And that's about a week after David Griffin said they're one of the worst rebounding teams in the last 15 years, which statistically, yes, they're not a very good rebounding team. It was finally nice to see them actually beat someone on the boards. But looking ahead as well, Ollie, as I mentioned with this Los Angeles Lakers matchup on Fat Tuesday, the Lakers, I don't know if I've actually ever brought it up to you, the Luka Doncic trade was just unbelievable. And obviously, we're a couple weeks removed from it. Luka's kind of settling in. I know that he put up that triple-double performance against the Mavericks just the other night, and he became the third player in NBA history to have a triple-double against every single team in the NBA. So your thoughts on Luka's fit with the Lakers and obviously, you know, their postseason aspirations, but their matchup with the Pelicans next week as well?
And from a vantage point of a New Orleans follower and fan, I absolutely hate it. But for a Los Angeles perspective, you have to love it, right? You've got a guy that's not even in his prime, that's one of the top five, if not top two or three players, probably for the next 10 years in Luka Doncic, right? So you've got your heir apparent to LeBron James. And the reason I like it is because, you know, we've seen it. LeBron's been tasked with doing too much over these last, what, two, 3 years, to where honestly it's driven his body into the ground at times, caused injury and such. So he can't get through an 82-game schedule. You don't want to push a 40-year-old, right, who's already doing incredible things, that much even harder. So I think Luka's going to honestly work out any better to where he's going to be able to control the offense, and now LeBron can pick his spots. And moreover, I think LeBron understands the game so well that he's going to play more of a, at times, like a Draymond Green type role. He's going to be kind of the big, doing the dirty work, getting rebounds, steals, and blocks, and letting Luka, right, run the offense and get the scoring going along with Austin Reeves. So that's why, honestly, I think, guys, the Lakers, they might be my third favorite team to come out of the West, right? If it's all said and done, we're in the playoffs, OKC is everybody's favorite. Then it's like neck and neck for me between the Lakers and Golden State. Because I think both of those trades, right, Luka to the Lakers, Jimmy Butler to the Warriors, has really just changed their chemistry for the better. I know the Lakers are missing right size. You're relying on Jackson Hayes a little bit too much. But I think they can overcome it because most of this league is small anyways. Right. And the Lakers, their defense has been fantastic without Anthony Davis. Kind of a surprise to everybody. So I think they're fine.
One of the Pels I'm definitely pulling for, Ollie, Jordan Hawkins, and he's been getting a lot more minutes lately at least, but still been kind of cold from that 3-point range. What's it going to take for this guy to get going?
Yeah, you know, we're watching him closely because you're right. I mean, this has been a heck of a spell. I mean, he opened the season actually decently, then that back issues cropped up and he hasn't been the same since. He'll have an occasional game where he kind of gets to whatever point total over 10, but it usually takes him that amount of shot attempts,
yeah.
Right? So, I mean, that was like that the other night. So when you watch him, he can shoot the spot up, and then he's trying to get to the rim, and at times he's successful. But the problem is his jumper, when he's trying to elevate over guys, it's just not going down. And I'm not sure because I don't have the most trained eyes. I'm not a shooting expert, but I don't think his shot looks the same either. Some are more line driving. He doesn't have that soft touch like we've seen last year, right? So I think he's just going through things that are probably physical and mental. So I'm just guessing we probably won't even see, the best of Jordan the rest of this year because we're already, three, four quarters almost through the season, and right. he still hasn't found it. I think it's going to take a full offseason for him before he gets comfortable again.
Your thoughts on the minutes for some of these guys as well, Ollie, because I saw Bruce Brown just this past night getting a ton of minutes. Obviously, Kelly Olynyk was getting a good amount of minutes as a starter for the game. But playing the young guys, it feels like that's what the Pelicans should be focusing on this point of the season. You know, Antonio Reeves, as you mentioned, Jordan Hawkins, Steve, but also Carlo, all these guys on the bench that should be getting a ton of minutes for this team at this point of the season to see what you have for them ahead of next year.
Yeah, you know that's going to be the plan, right? I mean, I noticed the other day that I think Kelly didn't even come close to 30 minutes, that they're really dividing up those minutes, right, making sure Carlo gets over 20. And I think Antonio Reeves is eventually going to join that group as well. Can't forget Brandon Boston once he's back, too. I mean, all of a sudden, we don't see Jeremiah Robinson, Earl, for instance, right, last few games, hardly at all has been out there on the court. So, yeah, it's without a doubt focus on development. And I'll tell you what, Carlo Matkovich is finally showing some things, right? The other night had 19 points for a career high. I think he only missed one shot in that game against the Spurs, 7 of 8 shooting. And you just like that he looks more confident, more aggressive chasing rebounds, being able to hold his ground. So I'm very curious if maybe the Pelicans have something there, right? Because he's still going to be under contract for at least next season, maybe two. Not sure. I can't remember off the top of my head. But, yeah, you would hope that he could maybe fill like a Larry Nance role for you. And then with Antonio Reeves, Jordan Hawkins, you want to see these guys find their shot. Same thing with Brandon Boston. He's going to be a part of the rotation. So having all these guys play and play decent minutes is going to be so helpful the next season because a lot of these guys will be back.
We haven't even talked about the big guy, Zion Williamson. Have you been noticing a difference in him at all? I know Trey Murphy said the other night, you know, there's just a different look in his eye, seems to be more committed right now. And, I mean, when he's playing, he's been so efficient. And I don't know if they'll end up ramping up the minutes this season for him. It's, you know, kind of a lost year for the Pelicans. What's the point of, you know, extending him right now? But overall, what have been your thoughts on Zion right now?
I've loved it. Ever since he came back from those hamstring couple strains, he's been fantastic. Where on both sides of the ball, you're seeing the Zion you thought that the Pelicans had drafted right out of Duke. Where on both sides, offensively, he's that menace that we've gotten to know. But defensively now, he's getting those steals, blocks, guarding fast point guards. The other night against the Mavericks, guard Kyrie Irving did a really good job not letting him get it by him. Multiple times. So when he can play like that, it just takes him to an elite level where he becomes suddenly a top 15 or maybe top 20 player automatically with that high field goal percentage, right? He's an offensive initiator. He is your point guard right for now and probably through the rest of the season. So he's, when you look at his numbers, for instance, Steve, over the last, what, 5-6 weeks per 36 minutes, it's very comparable to what Shai Gilgeous has been doing. Right, so that impact per minute is fantastic. And the fact that we can say it's also on the defensive end, even better. Right, so hopefully this will get the carryover because we haven't seen this Zion. And that's why you want to see him finish the year healthy, right, so he can work on his game over the summer instead of, say, something like rehab, which has usually been his course of action.
Ollie, I'm going to throw a wild curveball at you right before we let you run. You talked about the Western Conference. The Eastern Conference, there's a great story that I think is being a little bit underreported in NBA circles, and that's the Detroit Pistons, who for the last 3 years have just been a miserable franchise. I think they won a total of 33 games in those three seasons. Right now, they're 31. It was like 31 and 133, I think, was their record. Right now, they're 33 and 26 at sixth place in the Eastern Conference. They're not even in the play-in tournament at this point. They're in the playoffs in the East. They've won 8 straight games. They just picked up a signature victory over the Boston Celtics. And Trajan Langdon, obviously, the ties with New Orleans, so that's part of the reason why I brought it up. But, I mean, is there a better story in basketball right now than what the Detroit Pistons are quietly doing?
No, I mean, coming out of the All-Star break, they were already a good story, right? Just making the play-in tournament would have been a great story for them, but now it has to be one of the top stories, if not the top one, right? 8 in a row, you just mentioned, if they can stay in this position, not even have to go through the play-in route. And I'll tell you what, if they can stay at 6 and the Knicks stay at 3, with the way the Knicks have kind of looked a little bit more, let's say, you're not positive of just how good this team is, right? Because they can't beat the really good teams. Well, with the way the Pistons are playing, could the Pistons possibly upset the Knicks, say, in the first-round matchup? Because Cade Cunningham, he's playing like an all-NBA player, right? You were wondering where his career was going, right? He was inefficient. There's a lot of comps saying that he's not even half as good as Brandon Ingram. And this year he's put it all together, guys. And then they've also got some other young guys. Jalen Duren, their center moving forward, looks good. You've got Malik Beasley. What a great pickup by Trajan Langdon. He's one of the league leaders in three-point shooting. And you just like the toughness and chemistry overall with that team. Yeah, it's clicking for them. I'm happy Trajan went to a spot where he's, you know, basically I hope he gets lauded for all the work that he's done and how they've made a nice turnaround.
Yeah, and I thought they were crazy last year, you know, just giving one and done for Monty Williams, and not so crazy after all.
Yeah, J.B. Bickerstaff is killing it there right now.
Yes.
Ollie, always appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and looking forward to tonight's tip-off, 8 o'clock against the Suns. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Ollie.
Thanks, guys. Have a good Mardi Gras, too.
Thank you, man. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We'll be right back after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Well, party people, WWL is your Mardi Gras information station. Rolling tonight, Uptown, crew of Babylon, Chaos Amuses, and in Metairie, the crew of Symphony. Just go to WWL.com and get everything you need to know. Plus, check out our Mardi Gras safety guide. We'll tell you what you can and can't bring to parades, where to find first aid stations, and just general common sense safety tips. Also, listen for Arthur Hardy's parade previews weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. and 8:30 a.m., high noon, and on your drive home at 5. He'll tell you which crews are rolling and what they'll be throwing and any changes along the way. All presented by LCMC Health, keeping you well on WWL. We're taking a break and be back with more of Sports Talk right after this. We are closing out the second half of Sports Talk. Yesterday at the NFL Combine, we saw Shedeur Sanders walking around. He had a Browns, Vikings, and Saints hat hanging from his backpack. Today, Nick Underhill of NewOrleans.football reporting that the Saints have met with quarterback Cam Ward. So a little interesting there, but you know what? When it comes down to it, you know how many prospects the Saints are going to be quote-unquote meeting with over the next couple of days?
Due diligence.
Yes, exactly.
That's all it is. They're meeting with a guy. I don't think there's any world where the Saints trade up from pick 9 to pick 1 and just deplete their draft assets for the future to get Cam Ward. That wouldn't be a very smart decision. I also don't think there's any real reality where Cam Ward falls past like pick 5 in this draft.
I agree.
So due diligence, that's all it is.
Tomorrow on Sports Talk, me and Jeff Nowak will be talking to you more about the NFL Combine. Justin Mello of the Draft Network will join us. Want to tune in for that? He's always got great knowledge. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Coming up 7:30, Pelicans pregame coverage against the Suns. For Charlie Long, I'm Steve Geller. Have a great night, everybody. Enjoy the parades and talk to you tomorrow. Who dat?